The Sunday Baroque podcast is made possible by WSHU and the Friends of Sunday Baroque. You can find out more about the Friends of Sunday Baroque and find out how to become one yourself by visiting our website, sundaybaroque.org, under the Contact tab. Pianist Frederick Chu stopped by our studios to talk about his career as a professional musician, and I asked him what it's like to play more intimate spaces like houses and churches as opposed to playing in larger recital or concert halls.
I personally really enjoy the more intimate spaces. I love doing house concerts, and if it was, you know, economically feasible, I'd do only house concerts because I really feel like there's a connection between myself and the people who are listening. It's much more of a two-way street than in a large concert hall where it's pretty much one way, and I just have to trust that the audience is reacting the way I'm hoping they're reacting. In a house concert, in a smaller setting, I would say up to 200-300 people, it's much more of a give and take. It's not that I consciously change my interpretation because of what people are doing in the hall, but I know that they are with me, and I know that they know that I'm with them. It's more of a communication, and that is really, for me, deep down, what the reason I'm playing concerts is to try to get that communication, try to get people involved in the whole act of performing.
So this is all piano solo, then?
All piano solo.
Okay.
Yeah. And I have a particular thing for the piano, obviously. It's my instrument. But I really feel the piano is an instrument that's special. It's different from all other instruments. And the piano is, for me, one of the most important inventions in human history. It's on the level of the printing press or the internet. It's something that allows the general public to access something. You know, the printing press accessing words and thoughts, and the internet accessing information, and the piano accessing music. And, you know, in the 18th, 19th century, everybody had a piano at their home or somewhere, you know, and most people knew how to play something. And these transcriptions that you find of symphonies, of quartets arranged for four hands, these are all meant for public consumption. These are meant for people who knew how to play those well enough so that they could sit down with anybody who happened to be there and play through, you know, the latest Beethoven symphony or Mozart symphony. It was the stereo of the time. So for me, to go back to listening to the piano as a source of something important, as opposed to listening to another instrument or listening to a recording. It's really music that's being created right there for you for the express purpose of communicating something. So I try to create that kind of atmosphere, recreate that kind of atmosphere in a concert.
I'm curious to know how you personally got into music. I'm assuming you started on the piano.
I started on the piano. My parents, when I was six, they decided that it was time to start some piano lessons. Neither of my parents are musicians. My mother played a little bit, but not very well. And certainly it wasn't at a level where she could teach me. My father, his older sister, actually studied piano quite seriously. She went to the Manhattan School of Music, and she studied with a number of famous teachers, but she had a hand injury, and so she couldn't perform. And so she's a piano teacher, and has been for her whole career. And so she was kind of my distant mentor, but I didn't learn from her. She lived far away, so it was more just this kind of spiritual presence, you know, that my father would refer to. So anyway, at six, I started lessons, and I didn't really take to it right away. I wasn't a prodigy. I wasn't some kind of musical genius that could play anything, but I was very fast. I was very smart and nimble, and so I was able to do what was expected of me. And I studied with a local piano teacher who wasn't very ambitious and didn't really push me to do any more than her other students. It's just that I didn't have to work as hard to get to get the job done. And and then it was this thing where, well, if I did this well, I would go to the next step. And then I would do that and do that well, I go to the next step. And eventually the next step was joining some orchestra to play cello and kind of enlarging my musical experience, then playing French horn and then playing oboe. And then all of a sudden music was this thing that I did all through high school. And then the next step was, well, go to Bloomington, Indiana University, which was just an hour away from where we lived in Indianapolis, and great music school. That's the next step. So I went there. I actually studied computer science and music at the same time. But music was always kind of the guiding light. And then from there, the next step was then Juilliard. And then from there was doing competitions and doing auditions. And then I kind of broke from the next step kind of thing. And I moved to Paris and kind of dropped all the competitions, dropped all the auditions, and really focused on the music. And it was really the first time that I started listening to what I was playing instead of just executing the music that was in front of me on the stand. And then I started to, it took a couple of years, but that's where I had a kind of a transformation about what piano playing means and what music making means and the idea of having a career and pursuing that. By the time I consciously decided, well, I should focus on being a pianist and making that my profession, I had already gotten a manager, I had already won competitions, I had already made recordings, I was already playing concerts, so I was in that track even before I consciously decided that that was what I really wanted to do. Hmm. So, I think that itinerary in life could have been, as an architect, it could have been as a computer scientist, it could have been in any particular field, which I had an affinity for. It just happened to be music, and it happened to be the piano. And it turns out that the piano is something where you have to start early and apply yourself every day, sometimes beyond the point of, are you actually enjoying it? You just have to do some of the work. Mm-hmm. So I actually believe that some of the this non-thinking approach to playing the piano when I was young actually allowed me to get to a place that was further than if I had only done what I liked, or if I only did what I really had a innate talent for, or some kind of special affinity mm-hmm. for. And that's a big dilemma for me now as a parent. I see my kids, they're 8, 10, and 12, and they're starting to show personality traits that tend toward this or that. They're starting to show interest in this particular thing, have an obsession for this or that. And I think, well, how do I deal with that? My parents would have dealt with it in a very different way than parents do today in general. And, it's a big dilemma. Mm-hmm. Do I push my kids to do something I know they need to do now and I know they'll benefit from later? Or do I let them find their own path and hopefully encourage them and help them do what they want? Mm-hmm. Well, big dilemma.
Well, and that's a good jumping off point for me to kind of back up just a little bit and ask you why was it that your parents were so clear about having you begin piano lessons at 6, since they didn't have the personal connection with it, right. as musicians themselves? Right. Was it that they felt this was something that any young gentleman should have, or was it some reining you in? Or
well, I think it was that, what you said, just part of general being cultivated. I think in general, the Chinese culture respects tradition and respects these long-running cultural traditions especially. I just read an article talking about China today. Apparently there are 80 million people studying the piano in China. And that's incredible. And the piano, again, I think because the piano is such an important instrument, and people naturally will go towards it in order to make music. But it's also this, the Western music is part of the greatest thinking and the greatest art that man has created. And so I think that was part of the reason my parents pushed me to it. They also pushed me into Little League. They pushed me into Scouts. They pushed me, you know, school was starting then. They just pushed me into a lot of things. And I think I was a little bit better at the piano than at baseball. So I ended up studying piano more. And so obviously I had some affinity and some talent for music more than other things. But it wasn't something that really cried out. It wasn't me saying, I want piano lessons and you have to get me an instrument and improvising things, you know, that I heard on the radio. It wasn't that at all. And I know people who are like that, and I know kids. I've met kids who are like that, and I don't recognize myself at all in that profile. But I think there are very few people in life who actually encounter the thing that they have a genius for and have the support and the motivation to pushing them, you know, into that field. I think most of us who do well end up doing something well because we worked hard and because we're smart and we know how to apply those smarts to working well, and we learn a skill. You know, humans can learn a lot of things and do a lot of things well.
Mm-hmm. People often will compare, and it's often people who are not musicians who do this, but musicians sometimes do as well. But people often compare music and mathematics. And since you have that degree in computer science and have, you know, can speak with some experience from that point of view as well, I'm sort of curious to know what you think about that.
Well, it's not, for me, it's not the obvious connections where math is counting and music is counting, or you know, this kind of 12 tone or kind of Bach numerology kind of thing where you have a theme and then you can play it backwards and it's the same theme or upside down. What those kinds of things don't really explain to me the connection that I feel. It's more a matter of how you approach problems. For me, computer science and the programming and the logic behind it is kind of the opposite direction of music, where in music you have this huge thing, and you have to, in order to understand it, you have to break it into smaller things and then break those into smaller things until you get down to the very basic elements of play this note this way, and then you start linking them back up, play these two notes in this combination, and then these four notes, and then this phrase, and then put these phrases together, and then you build up a movement, and then put these movements together, you build a piece, and then put these pieces together, you build a program, et cetera, et cetera. And for me, computer programming is kind of similar kind of path, where you have a problem, you're trying to have a program do this particular thing. You have to break it down into smaller components and break those down and break those down until you get to the basic code of add one and two, or add this number and that number, whatever those may be. And then, you know, the formulas add up into larger formulas and larger and then modules, and then you have this program. So the mental approach that I applied to music and to computers was the same. And I think that on the one side, you approach kind of there's a search for elegance, search for elegance and search for beauty, simplicity that comes from a scientific side through theory and through testing, experimenting, and you arrive at an explanation like E equals MC squared or you know, some simple formula that then can be used to explain a whole bunch of things. And music comes from the other side, from art, where you have all this variety of points of views and experiences and different tastes. And yet somehow you can get a number of people together and they can play a piece together and enjoy it. And you can get a larger number of people together to listen to a performance and they can enjoy it. And you can have a whole culture behind a certain piece or a certain genre, and they can all understand and enjoy it. And so there's also this search for some kind of simple truth and elegance and beauty that can be understood by everybody. And so for me, it's coming from one side, the science, and experimenting, and the other side, the understanding of human psychology and experience, and both of them trying to reach this thing in the middle, which is truth and beauty and elegance and symmetry, you know, structure, is something in the middle there that is both science and art.
You do a little of, I can't say a little of everything, but you do a little of many things. And, you know, you've talked pretty exclusively about classical music, but you're also doing some collaborations with some jazz musicians, for example.
So. Right. I just did a concert this past summer with Bob James, who's an amazing musician, amazing pianist, and just an amazing person. And I knew the musician side of it before this concert, but I met him for the first time in getting together and putting this recital together. And he's just the nicest, most open, most collaborative person that I've ever met, really. Mm. And we had such a great time putting this concert together. And it was a trial run for a series that I'm hoping to put together next year of all 9 Beethoven symphonies performed in the four-hand versions with jazz pianists as collaborators. Mm-hmm. And then springing off from that idea, playing classical pieces that draw on the art of improvisation, and then having real improvisation based on the Beethoven symphonies. Mm-hmm. Bob James, of course, is on the list. Fred Hirsch, Makoto Ozone, great Japanese jazz pianist. Uri Kane, who does a lot of work with Mahler as standards using these classical works. David Benoit. So it's a very exciting project. For the moment, I have absolutely no idea how it's going to present itself. When I got together with Bob, we had kind of an idea of what we wanted to do. Something, each of us separate, and then something, each of us together, collaborating, and then the Beethoven Symphony. But we really put it together in the 2 days that we, where we met and worked it out. And I know that with the other pianists, it's going to be a different process, and it's the end result is going to be different for each of them, based on their style, based on their style of working, their style of playing, based on the piece, the symphony that they've chosen. So it's going to be a very interesting collaborative experiment.
Hmm. Baroque music is often compared to jazz because of that improvisatory mm-hmm. nature and expectation. And right. Also, no Baroque music on that program. Huh?
Well, the thing... on the program with Bob James, he had arranged the Bach Cantata 147 for four hands, keeping the melody line, you know, the da 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 da, but then adding and kind of transforming the chords underneath more and more into Bob James' contemporary jazz sound as opposed to the standard Bach harmonizations. And at one point, the clash between the melody and the harmonies is so great that it kind of falls apart and then it goes into this strange rhythmic kind of thing and all these weird kind of Debussy-sounding chords kind of floating around. And then it comes back into the theme and things kind of smooth out. And Bob also choreographed it so that instead of just sitting down side by side and playing, we shifted parts while we were playing, and so I'd start. He started, and then I came in with a melody. Then I kind of took over and scooted over. Then he came around the other side, and started playing, and we kind of shifted back and forth. So it was a his variation on Bach, and it worked very well. As you said, there's a big connection between Bach and jazz. In this particular case, he made it really quite literal.
What's it like? How is it different to play, you know, as a soloist? I mean, obviously, there's the more solitary preparation and all that, but the actual collaborative experience and the actual performance experience is really different when you're performing, you know, chamber music or performing with other players, mm-hmm. as opposed to when you're performing as a soloist. And what's that experience like for you?
It is a very different experience, and I enjoy both. I think both are essential to me. I wouldn't want to give up one for the other. But it's very, very different. Performing with somebody, I actually forget the audience because I'm focused on the other person. The other person becomes the audience for me. And so it becomes more of a, you know, the people are listening in on what we're doing. The whole rehearsal part of the concert, which happens, of course, before the performance, I get a lot of pleasure out of that. And that's, for me, where a lot of my ideas come up against the other person's ideas, and there's friction, and there's negotiating, and there's compromise, and there's collaboration and innovation, and sparks fly. Lots of ideas come out of those sessions, even if it seems like I'm really in sync with the other person. Obviously, there are places where it won't be in sync, and it's like this feeling of improvisation. You're constantly on guard for what the other person's going to do in order to incorporate that. A little twist of the phrase that you didn't expect, and you try to incorporate that into your passage when you play that theme. And then the performance is much more of an execution of the things that we discovered. Whereas playing by myself, it's almost the opposite. It's when I'm working, it's the execution. I have an idea of what I want to do, and I try to execute that as best as I can. And if I can't do it, that's what I'm practicing. And it's much more of a straightforward work. And then when I get on stage, I open myself up. And I really say to myself, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, and I'm just open to watching. And I get out, and, you know, I'm prepared, and so I can let my body, I can let my mind just kind of do the job. And I'm sitting back as an audience member, hearing the performance and watching the performance as somebody sitting in the audience and thinking, oh, I like that. I don't like that. You know, how do I feel? And those kind of push and nudge the performance in a certain direction, but it's much less of a conscious effort at doing something. Mm-hmm. It's only when things start to fall apart that, you know, the consciousness comes in and says, okay, we got to save the situation. Play this note, you know, play that note. But in an ideal setting, all that work has been done and things really play themselves, and I'm sitting back and enjoying it. Mm-hmm. So I've never thought about that, but it's actually kind of the opposite procedure as, you know, between the rehearsal and the concert, executing and being open. And in a chamber music, it's being open during the rehearsals and then executing during the concert.
Hmm. If I recall correctly, you don't play with music. Is that correct?
When I play solo, I don't play with music.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that intentional? Is that something that you just feel you need to or want to or just naturally do, internalize the music, and it's easier not to let that get in the way?
For most of the music that I play, it's still possible to play it without music, and so I will, because I feel a lot freer. Although now I'm starting to get to the age, I remember what my teacher Abby Simon told me. He said, everything I learned before the age of 30, I can play without practicing. And everything I learned after the age of 30, I forget as soon as I stop working on it. So he has to constantly bring those pieces back. And, you know, I'm well beyond 30, and I'm starting to feel that that urge. Sviatoslav Richter had this moment where all of a sudden he decided, I'm going to play all my concerts now with music. And he knew all his pieces by heart. And he actually said, it's actually harder to play with music because you have to practice it to the point where you can play it without music and then have this music in front of you. And you have to negotiate, do I play from memory or do I look at the score when I'm playing? But he had that there as kind of a safety net because he really felt the tension of having to play without music. And I'm starting to feel that a little bit and debating, you know, is it worth that tension and the disruption of possibly making certain kinds of mistakes? Or is it better to have the score? It's a big debate. I think I see more people, more young musicians today, pianists, playing with music as a general rule. I think there was a tradition of playing without music that became kind of a challenge, that extra musical challenge, which detracts a little bit from listening and from performing. But it's a delicate line, you know, and I'm starting to come up to that line and trying to figure out what to do with it. But when I can, I play without music because it really frees me up. It allows me to, even physically, it allows me to move around in a way that I can't if I have my eyes stuck on one spot. And mentally, it allows me to go off on a tangent. Emotionally, it allows me to really focus on what I'm feeling and to focus on what the audience might be feeling, and it frees me up for performance.
I'm very curious to know about this workshop series, Deeper Piano Studies. Can you tell me what that's all about?
Yeah, Deeper Piano Studies is something I started in 2000 when I came back from living in Paris. I came back to the States. One of the main reasons I wanted to come back was to start these workshops, which approach piano playing from a, I'm going to say holistic, but that's, it doesn't really describe the approach. It's non-traditional. Instead of getting a group of people together and a bunch of pianos and everybody's practicing and I come and listen to people play and give them tips on use this finger instead of that one or play this louder, I get pianists together and I force them not to play. And there's only one piano. We only use it for one afternoon. Nobody practices, but we learn pieces that they have to perform from memory without ever having practiced them. We do exercises. We play games that use the same faculties as the ones you use when you play the piano. But when you use them away from the instrument, you become much more conscious of them and you see where they're developed and where they're not. And then we do a lot of cooking, which I feel is an activity that also calls on a lot of the same physical, mental, and emotional skills that we develop as pianists, but in a totally different domain and without the competitive aspect that we all feel as professional pianists. And so we're much freer to observe ourselves and to criticize ourselves and to compliment ourselves. And it's much more collaborative. So we do a lot of these non-traditional things in the workshop. Things that most of us who get to a very high level of piano playing, most of us have found a solution to in one way or another on a personal level. But it's very haphazard, I feel. We don't learn these things in conservatory. We don't learn these things in music school. And yet I think that a lot of this can be taught in a very methodical, systematic way. So I decided to try to fill that gap a little bit. And so I have these workshops, which last 3 days. And I've had a number of them. And all the people, I can say very modestly, all these people who have gone through the workshop, every single one has come out on the other end with a transformation of some kind. Because we just don't learn not to play the piano when we are taught how to play the piano. And there's a huge amount of the work of playing the piano that has to be done, I think, away from the instrument in order for us to really understand. So everybody who goes through the workshop loves it. I'm doing a lot of presentations in schools and at conferences on the deeper piano studies techniques, and teachers love it. So I really feel like this is what I wanted to do as a teacher, as opposed to, you know, starting a class and having a studio and having people file in and out and playing pieces for me over and over. Mm-hmm. I really feel like I needed to find another way to teach, a way that complements what I'm trying to do on stage, which is to try to get people to be more aware of themselves and how they feel and how they're connected to themselves and to others. And this is the complement to that. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to develop that, and hopefully that will be my way of teaching, either, you know, private lessons or group lessons, mm-hmm. Approaching it that way.
It sounds, if I'm hearing you correctly, it sounds as though these are not necessarily very advanced pianists or aspiring professionals, but perhaps even much younger.
It's a wide-ranging group. Two things that I ask for. One is having many years of experience practicing, and preferably at an early age, because I think there's a lot of the emotional experience of going every day to the piano and trying to do something better, which is a rare thing. We don't have that many activities where we start young and we go to it over many years every day trying to improve it. And I think that creates a certain emotional experience that we can draw on to improve ourselves. And the second thing I ask for is some experience performing alone on stage, which is also a very rare experience. Pianists especially, you know, they get on stage totally alone. And, you know, even if you have just two or three listeners, they are there to listen to you for however many minutes you're playing. And I think most people don't even go through the experience of getting up and making a speech in front of a crowd. You know, it's a very rare thing, and pianists are not only experiencing that, they're actually training themselves to experience that. So if a person has those two experiences, I think there's a lot of emotional data to draw on, a lot of emotional experiences to help them reflect on themselves. You know, how do I act when I'm put under pressure? When you turn the fire up underneath me and things get to a boiling point, what happens? You know, that's when the chemical reactions start happening in cooking. It's when the heat is on and you're in a pressure situation that you really see who are the leaders and who are the followers. Not that one is better than the other, but having the experience of the daily practice and having the experience of, you know, being called to perform at a moment's, you know, this particular moment, you have to do everything right. Those are two very unique experiences, unique to pianists, I think, and so we can draw on those two to better ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Sure.
For making time to chat with me.
It's a great pleasure to be able to talk about all this stuff.